We're continuing to work our way through Exodus 20 this morning. And over the past few weeks, we have been memorizing Exodus chapter 20. I think this past week should have gotten you through the fourth commandment, right? Is that right, Waldman's? We should be through the fourth commandment now. Is that right in our memorization? Okay, so we'll memorize verse 12 for this week. That's the passage that we're dealing with this morning. So we should be in Exodus 20, verses 1 through 12 by next Lord's Day. Let me read it to you as we begin. I'll read the first 12 verses. And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands to those who love me and who keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And then our passage this morning is this. Verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Last week, we concluded the first table of the law. The commandments which make up the first table of the law articulate for us what it looks like to love God. Today we're going to begin the second table of the law. This table addresses what it looks like to love our neighbor as ourself. So if you were to add up all of these last six commandments, the sum of these commandments is loving your neighbor as yourself, or to say it another way is doing unto others what we would have them to do unto us. This is the sum of the last six commands. Now, it's also important to remember as we transition to the second table of the law is that the second table is only done by those who are striving to live out the first table. There's no category for those who love God but do not love people. You can't love God without loving the image of God. Nor is there a category for those who love people but don't love God. Apart from a loving dedication to God as expressed in the first table, we're left with oppression towards our neighbor. Okay? No matter how we try to dress it up with deceitful words, in the end, love looks like these commands or it's not love. The fifth commandment introduces us to a series of commandments that define proper relationship between people. Six of the commandments, that is the fifth through the tenth, six of the commandments serve as the standards of conduct in areas of human behavior that generate the most far-reaching consequences on individuals and on families and on societies at large. Our abuse of these commands, I hope we see over the next 6 weeks, is appalling. Just the intensity that the violations of these commands continue to be visibly seen in our hearts and by our actions, I hope surprise us. We desperately need to reverse these external fruits and these external internal fruits, these internal heart conditions, in order to live the lives that God has, that we ought to live as image bearers of God. We need to learn how to work together in relationships in every area of our life, just and to build stable, loving, and lasting relationships. Now, establishing the basic principles by which workable relationships can and will flourish is the objective of the last six commandments. They define with clarity areas of behavior in which human nature create the biggest roadblocks for peace and cooperation. They provide us with guidance to remove these roadblocks. The fifth commandment, I hope we see, sets the tone for the last six. It addresses the importance of learning to treat others with respect and honor. Like the fourth commandment, this commandment is prescriptive. And what I mean is, this commandment tells us what to do. Okay? Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And this one is, honor your father and your mother. It's not prohibitive as explicitly as the other eight. After God had prescribed laws for his own honor, his next care is for the honor of our parents, because they are, under God, the authors and origin of our life and being. We read Exodus chapter verse 12, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God has given you. I want to begin. I'm sorry I didn't ask this initially. Does everyone have a handout? I've got handouts. Brother Chuck, could you get people the handouts that need them? If you'll just raise your hand, because the information that's on the handout I didn't put on the PowerPoint. So if you want to follow along, you'll find it helpful. So the first question, again, I'm going to do this week like I have been doing, and allowing the catechism just to walk us through this commandment. Very good, very good. I'm going to hold off just a second because, can I have some of those? Because, okay, if we need more, we can make copies. I know Miss Vera needed one. The first thing that we're going to ask is, what is the general scope of the fifth commandment? Do you need more, or is that sufficient? Okay. Rex, just make sure you share with Julie. I helped you, Julie. What is the general scope of the fifth commandment? You see on your paper. And then it reads from the catechism, the general scope of the fifth commandment is the performance of those duties which we mutually owe in our several relations as inferiors, superiors, or equals. So I'll come back and just keep going in just a moment, but listen to what Calvin says. Hey, he says it like this about the fifth commandment. How, although particular mention is made here of the father and the mother, there can be no doubt about God's wanting to provide general doctrine with respect to all, to honoring all forms of authority. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17, we see commandments that really are from Peter that have just grown out of this fifth commandment, when he says in verse 17 of chapter 2, honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. This command touches not just on the relationship between parents and children, but every relationship we're in. As we see in 1 Peter, all people are to be honored, but as I hope we see this morning, honor will look different depending on the relationship. Okay? parents don't honor children in the same way that children honor parents, right? Because what we're going to see is that part of the honor that children owe parents is obedience. Parents don't owe children the honor of obedience. We'll see they owe them the honor of teaching them obedience and making sure they walk in the way of obedience. Question 124 asks this: who are meant by father and mother in the fifth commandment? Who are meant by father and mother in the fifth commandment? By father and mother in the fifth commandment are meant not only natural parents, but all superiors in age and gifts. Okay? All superior in age and gifts. And especially such as, by God's ordinance, are over us in place of authority, whether in family, church, or commonwealth. Now, in highlighting that idea of age and gifts, we see this in like 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, where Paul tells Timothy, "Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father." So we see this idea that we're treating older men with the honor that we would treat a father. Younger men as brothers. Older women as mothers. Younger women as sisters in all purity. So there's honor is given to all of these. But this one right here highlights just the honor that we ought to give to those who are more gifted than we are. We see it, Joseph describing it in Genesis 45, talking to his brothers. He tells them in verse 8, "So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt." Now, if we're thinking about Joseph being a father to Pharaoh, he's obviously not talking about literally. He didn't marry Pharaoh's mom, nor did his wife give birth to the guy who ended up being Pharaoh. But what he's speaking of here is Pharaoh honored Joseph because Pharaoh, as a father almost, because Pharaoh recognized that he had greater gifts than he did. God had blessed Joseph in ways that that Pharaoh didn't have, and Pharaoh honored him as a father because of this. So we see just this: people who have greater gifts than we do deserve an honor from us, deserve to receive honor from us. We also see, as it goes on in the that we just saw, in places over us, whether in family, church, in authority, we see again and again Paul being spoken of as a father or as a mother, a parent, if you will, to the churches that he has planted into the people there. And in Galatians 4:19, he speaks of them as his little children, for whom again I'm in the anguish of childbirth until Christ is formed in you. And then also we saw in 1 Peter 2:17 that those that God put in place in authority, in government over us, deserve honor. Honor the emperor. In 1 Peter 2:17. So, in question 125, why are superiors styled father and mother? Do you have that? You don't have that one on there, do you? Okay, it's there. Not on yours. I had to choose because I didn't have enough room on the paper, so I got the ones that highlighted the ones the most that I wanted you to think of. Why are superiors styled? Why are they called father and mothers in this fifth commandment? Why doesn't he just say, people who are inferiors, honor superiors? Why does he talk about fathers and mothers and children? Superiors, it answers it like this: superiors are styled father and mother both to teach them in all duties towards their inferiors, like natural parents, to express love and tenderness to them according to their several relations, and to work inferiors to a greater willingness and cheerfulness in performing their duties to their superiors. So what he's saying here is to show them just the tenderness and the love that superiors ought to show towards those who are under them. They ought not to be oppressive. They ought not to be domineering over the people under them. They are to treat them with the love and the affection and the tenderness that they would treat children, that a father and mother should treat their children. But another reason parents are emphasized in this command is because the parent-child relationship is where submission for authority is learned. Okay? It's where it begins. If one isn't taught to submit to parents, then they will not submit to other authorities. This is the training grounds for all other relationships. Learning to take responsibility for our own conduct and character is the beginning of good relationships. Our character, which drives our conduct, begins to form during our childhood. It's during our formative years that our attitudes towards governing our personal desires in relation to the desires and needs of others is shaped. This is the primary focus of the fifth commandment, the importance of learning to respect others while we're still children. The fifth commandment shows us from whom and how the fundamentals of respect and honor are most effectively learned. It guides us to know how to differ to others, how to properly submit to authority, how to accept the influence of mentors. And that's why the Apostle Paul wrote, "Honor your father and your mother," which is the first commandment with a promise, "that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth." Learning to obey this command helps children establish a lifelong pattern of respecting proper rules and traditions and principles and laws. Honoring others should be normal. It should be just the natural habit learned during youth. And this universal application is an important biblical principle is plain, as we saw in 1 Peter, honor all men. Love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. It all begins with respect and honor that we're taught to show our parents. It doesn't, and I think as we all know, even showing honor and respect towards our parents doesn't come naturally. I've never had, you know, we've all heard this before. I've never had to teach my children to dishonor me. That comes natural. I've had to teach them to obey and to honor. So in question 127, the next one on your paper says, what is the honor that inferiors owe to their superiors? What is the honor? And it answers it like this, and we'll try to look at it more closely. The honor which inferiors owe to their superiors is all due reverence in heart, word, and behavior, prayer and thanksgiving for them, imitation of their virtues and graces, willing obedience to their lawful commands and counsels, due submission to their corrections, fidelity to defense and maintenance of their persons and authority, according to their several ranks and the nature of their places, bearing with their infirmities, covering them in love, that so they may be an honor to them and to their government. So I have several ways from this that we're going to look at what honor looks like towards superiors. The first one is that the heart of this word, first, is that honor has to do with attitude. It has to do just with the disposition of the heart. Okay? Now, we'll come back in a moment and ask, if this honor that we're talking about in the fifth commandment is a disposition of the heart, I'll talk about briefly, you know, I hear today just this dichotomy a lot of times when I'm talking to people about parenting, and one reason that parents, it seems, want to step back and not want to give spankings anymore or as much is because they want to say things like, that's about externals. and morality, but we're concerned about their heart. And just to see, even from this commandment, that, and from the Proverbs especially, that there is a direct relationship between the butt and the heart. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. There is a relationship there. At the heart of this word and this commandment is the idea that to honor one's parents is to esteem them as having value. By esteeming them as having value, one also confers upon them great value in the community. Acknowledging that these special people have honor and actually giving them honor go hand in hand. Okay? Realizing that they have honor and actually giving them honor can't be separated. This word for honor, translated here in Exodus 20, is at other times in the Bible translated glory. It denotes something that has weight, that has value. The English idiom of counting someone as a heavyweight is similar. It doesn't indicate size, but importance in the community. To honor exalts the object. It's a word used frequently in worship towards God. But when we talk about honoring parents and other superiors, we need to have a category of degrees of honor. Okay? Notice in the catechism that it even refers to all due reverence. Okay? All due reverence. We ought to give them all due reverence, all the reverence that is due to them. Not all superiors are due the same degree of honor. All superiors are due some degree of honor, but not all superiors deserve equal degree of honor. All children should have some degree of honor for their parents, if for no other reason that in God's sovereignty we would not have existed without our parents. Again, hear these words from someone of years gone by. I think this is a Calvin quote, actually. Now, it is quite a detestable thing, as well as contrary to nature, for a child not to acknowledge those through whom he came into the world, those who have fed and clothed him. End quote. Even if our parents have revealed that they are some of the most rotten scoundrels who ever lived, the very fact that for 9 months you lived and grew by being nurtured in your mother's womb, and likely after that received your sustenance from her very breast, is all the reason in the world to acknowledge that they do deserve a certain degree of honor. This doesn't mean that you and your parents have to be BFFs. Perhaps your parents are wicked. But honor means that you don't delight in spreading bad news about their wickedness. It means that you don't delight in their fall. It means that you pray for them and acknowledge with thankfulness the ways that God has blessed you by them. All superiors aren't due the same honor, right? I mean, both Saul and David deserved honor, for they were both kings of Israel. But even to this day, David receives more honor than Saul because he was a godly king. And we can't honor ungodly superiors by showing obedience to their ungodly commands. But even in light of this, we should never actively dishonor our superiors with words or deeds, attempting to bring shame upon them. It should be in our hearts to want to protect their honor as much as we can without bearing false witness. And sometimes this just means, sometimes this demands silence. Honoring our parents doesn't cease when we become adults, okay? A lot of times we read the fifth commandment as though it's just speaking to little children. But it doesn't cease when we become adults. It's a lifetime commitment. But honoring will not look the same at all times of our life. Honoring your parents as a child will not look exactly the same as honoring your parents as an adult. And in the same way, responsibilities of a parent towards their child should not look the same when they're an adult as they did when they were children. When parents are parenting young children, their responsibilities The responsibilities of a parent towards their children should not look the same as when they're adult as they do when they're children. When parents are parenting young children, their responsibilities are instruction and commands and teaching. And a young child's behavior should be primarily characterized by their swift obedience to their parents. I've heard people in this congregation talk about before, children's obedience should be all the way, right away, with a happy heart. That's teaching this idea of honoring. But a parent's responsibility towards their adult child should be seen as unhealthy if there is as much instruction and commands as there was when their children were small. Therefore, because parents shouldn't be given their adult children commands, I'm speaking primarily of married adult children, then the child's honor will not be primarily through by being seen as obedience. But obedience is very much related to honoring your parents. We see that in Ephesians chapter 6. It's there. In Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then he quotes the fifth commandment, honor your father and your mother, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. But in the very conversation of honoring parents, he brings up obedience, because the apostle sees this direct connection between honor and obedience. But we must not rest and think that external obedience always equals honor. Okay? External obedience doesn't always mean that you're being that the superior is being honored. We obey them and honor them when we delight in serving. We have a good attitude about what they say because we view their words as weighty. I regularly tell children who are complaining about their parents' style of parenting these words. Listen, believe me here. Nobody loves you like your parents do, especially not your friends. Hear your parents' words and believe this. They really want the best for you. Because it's dishonor that really calls that into question, especially among teenagers. Much of the time, children's dishonor for parents is just rooted in pride. The child is convinced they know more than their parents do. They're so much more wise than their parents. And then typically they become parents and realize that they were fools. Now, when we talk about obedience and its relationship with honoring, one question that regularly comes up is, how long must adult children obey their parents? We could discuss this at length about when and how someone becomes an adult. The thing that I want to address this morning that we all ought to agree on is going back to the primary thing of the heart of this honor. Young person, if it's your heart's throb to hurry up and get out from under a position where you don't have to obey your parents anymore, then you're not honoring them. Because if you really see this counsel and these commands and their words are as weighty, you're not going to be looking for an escape door to get out from under these things that you esteem. You're going to be collecting them up and treasuring them in your heart. That's the main thing that I want us to see this morning in talking about, well, how long? Now, I would definitely say, in just touching this, that again, I think we would all agree on this. When a child is married, their relationship changes with their parents. or it ought to. And when it doesn't, as I said earlier, something unhealthy is going on. Sometimes it's the superior's fault, and sometimes it's the inferior's fault. But in both cases, being married doesn't, as I said earlier, doesn't free us from the what this command is talking about of honoring our parents. Another thing that this honor teaches is there's an aspect of honoring which is financially assisting our parents. Okay? Obviously, this doesn't look like this when you're a child, but when you become an adult, there is this aspect of honoring that's finance. You're offering financial assistance. As they get older, this may include physically caring for them as necessary, or helping them financially. You see, Jesus criticized the Pharisees in his day who neglected making appropriate provisions for the care of their elderly parents. In Mark 7, in verse 8, Jesus told the Pharisees, "You leave the command of God and hold to the traditions of men." He said to them, "You have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to establish your own tradition. For Moses said, 'Honor your father and your mother, and whoever reviles his father or mother must surely die.' But you say, 'If a man tells his father or his mother, whatever you would have gained from me is Corban, that is, given to God,' then you no longer permit him to do anything for his father and your mother." See, we see that there is this responsibility that of children giving this honor of assistance to their parents, and the Pharisees were telling them, "No, give that to God. That's more important than giving it to your parents." And then it justifies not wanting to help your parents. We also see in 1 Timothy this same idea. 1 Timothy chapter 5, where Paul, again, in the same context of what we saw earlier, he's talking about honor among relationships. Well, I don't have the PowerPoint for this one either. But listen, in the same context of, "Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, in all purity. Honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow," listen, "but if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and make some return to their parents. For this is pleasing in the sight of God." And then in verse 8, Paul writes, "But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So we have this category here of children and grandchildren have the responsibility of caring for their parents and grandparents in their older age. But the last thing, I've already touched on it some, is another way of showing honor to parents is seeking to guard their name and their reputation. It has to do with the things that we communicate about them to other people. It's the way that you think about them. And we're thinking about parents and grandparents, but we're also thinking about just superiors altogether, people who are above us, over us. But how do you think about them? Do you approach them? Do you relate to them mainly with a critical attitude, or focusing on their weaknesses? Or are you very aware of the strengths and the gifts that God has given them? Do you give thanks for these strengths? Do you give thanks for them? Do you offer prayers up concerning them? Do you genuinely seek their prosperity? Do you want them to do well? These are all ways that we either reveal honor or reveal dishonor in our hearts towards those who are over us. So the next question on our list is 128. What are the sins of inferiors towards their superiors? What are the sins of inferiors towards their superiors? The sins of inferiors against their superiors are all neglect of the duties regarded towards them. So all the things that we spoke of in question 127. Envying at, contempt of, and rebellion against their person and places. In their lawful counsels, commands, and corrections, cursing, mocking, and all such refractory and scandalous carriage. Such proves a shame and a dishonor to them and their government. First, when we're talking about the sins of inferiors against their superiors, there's a couple things that I want us to make sure that we see. First, this is not a light matter. A lot of times, we tend to think of sins that everyone commits from time to time as lightweight sins. And sins that only some people fall into as heavyweight sins. But listen, here are a couple passages that just should press upon to our hearts and awaken our consciences towards this sin of inferiors towards their superiors. In Romans 1, towards the end of the chapter, Paul writes, "And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil." Wow. And right there in the middle, "disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die." Okay, this is interesting, and I think we ought to be really careful anytime we advise or counsel children who are who are under their parents' authority to disobey their parents, because Paul says that even though we know that people who do this deserve to die, they not only do them, but they give approval to those who do them. Another passage that I want us to see is Deuteronomy 21. "If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or mother, the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him," hear that, "and though they discipline him, will not listen to them, then his father and mother shall take hold of him, bring him out to the elders of the city at the gate of the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of the city, 'This is our son. This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He's a glutton and a drunkard.' Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear." What we have here is the civil law, one of the uses of the civil law in action. Does anyone remember from our first or second lesson what the use of the civil law was? The civil use of the law. That's right, it restrains evil, okay? One of the purposes of the law is that it restrains evil. One way to assure that evil and wickedness will spread in a community is not to punish certain crimes. And one way to assure that less and less people become stubborn and rebellious is to consistently punish lawbreakers. The law consistently enforced restrains evil. People hear about it and they fear disobeying. We see that in Deuteronomy 21. But from this same passage, I want us to also take note of this. Not all stubborn and rebellious sons are due to unfaithful parenting. Did you see that? It says they're stubborn and rebellious. They don't listen to their voice, though they discipline them. So these are parents who have been faithful to discipline them, but yet they have a son, they have sons that doesn't listen. In this passage, we see that this rebellious son is not the result of parents who are too lazy to discipline their children, and now their child has grown up to be a terror. These parents disciplined their son, but he wouldn't listen. We shouldn't be quick to point the finger at parents when their child or children goes astray. Now, it is true that sons and daughters at times are exasperated by their parents, but that's not the only reason for rebellion. Just because someone is insubordinate doesn't mean that it's the authority's fault. One thing that stood out to me over the years that we don't initially notice when reading this command is the implicit responsibility placed upon superiors. This command explicitly tells inferiors how to honor superiors, to honor and how to honor superiors, but it implicitly speaks to superiors how to relate to inferiors. And it's required. So we see in our catechism in 129, what is required of superiors towards their inferiors? And the answer is, it is required of superiors according to that power they receive from God and that relation wherein they stand to love, pray for, and bless their inferiors, to instruct, counsel, and admonish them, countenancing, commending, and rewarding such as do well, and discountenancing, reproving, and chastening such as do ill, protecting and providing for them all things necessary for body and soul, and by grave, wise, holy, and exemplary carriage to procure glory to God, honor to themselves, and so to preserve that authority which God hath put upon them. Notice this from the command, that it is the superior's job to do two things, or part of their responsibility is two things. This isn't exhaustive, it gives a whole list of things, but a lot of times superiors do well at one of these but poorly at another. It's not just superior's job to critique the people under them and tell them what they've done wrong or to punish them for what they've done wrong. But it's also the superior's responsibility to see what the people under them are doing well and to praise them for that, to reward them for that. Okay? It's not bribery if you reward your children for doing well. It's called godly leadership, right? God does the exact same things. If you disobey, you're going to die. If you obey, you're going to live. There were rewards for obedience and punishments for disobedience. But to summarize this catechism answer, superiors should act honorably towards their inferiors. They should act in such a way as that it makes it easy for inferiors to honor them. We could see in Ephesians 6 when Paul quotes this command that he understands this command from the fifth commandment to place obligations upon superiors also. He addresses both children and parents. And then also, I'm not going to quote this far, but he also addresses both servants and masters. But children, obey your parents in the Lord. And then he goes on in verse 4 to say, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So this command he sees touching both children, showing them their responsibilities, and adult parents showing them their responsibilities. God places the primary responsibility for teaching children the basic principles of life directly upon the shoulders of parents. The ability of mothers and fathers to succeed in this responsibility depends significantly on how much they in turn submit to God's instruction and teaching and showing love and respect for Him. Remember, the four commandments that emphasize the importance of a personal relationship and submission to God precede this command to honor our parents. After all, God is the ultimate parent. Notice how God challenged the spiritual leaders of Israel in Micah 1:6. He says, A son honors his father, a servant his master. If I then be a father, where is my honor? If I be a master, where is my fear? We who are parents should think of ourselves as children, as in the children of God. And it's just as important for us to respect and obey our Heavenly Father as it is for our children to respect and obey us. And when only then is it possible for us to fully grasp our role as the spiritual leader of our children. When we first honor and obey God, we set up the proper example for our children. We can develop habits of respect and obedience by observing our, they can do this by observing our example. One writer, I don't know who this was, I don't remember who this was, but I've got, not, it's not that I, the where I got this didn't even say who this story came from, but I found it really interesting as I was doing my studies. So follow along as I read. This guy says, "I well remember," says a Christian, a writer on Christian education, "being much impressed by a sermon when I was a young father, in which the preacher said, 'Were he to select one word as the most important in education, it should be the word obey.' My experience since has fully convinced me of the justice of this mark. Without filial obedience," that's the relationship between a child to his parents, "without this children obeying their parents, everything must go wrong. Is not a disobedient child guilty of a manifest breach of the fifth commandment? And is not a parent who suffers this disobedience to continue a habitual partaker in his child's offense against that commandment? By the obedience of our first parents, sin came into the world." Let me know when I've already gotten past it. You're supposed to remind me, Molly. Okay, thank you. "By the obedience of our first parents, sin came into the world, and through the obedience of the second Adam are the gates of heaven opened to true believers. The wicked are emphatically called the children of disobedience, and it is clearly the object of the divine plan of salvation to conquer the rebellious spirit of man and to bring him into a state of humility and submission." I'm making sure I haven't gone too far. "Parental authority is one powerful instrument for effecting the change. It is intended to bend the stubborn will, and by habituating a child to subjection to earthly parents, to prepare him for Christian obedience to his heavenly Father. In proportion as filial obedience is calculated to smooth the way for true religion, filial disobedience must produce the opposite effect. The parent who habitually gives way to it has appalling reason to apprehend that he is educating his child not for heaven, but for hell." Thank you. This is a sobering excerpt that should remind us of our responsibility as parents and as superiors. It's never easy for a superior to correct someone under their authority. That's why so many superiors fail in this area. But superiors must see this as it is. This failure to address issues is sometimes laziness, but usually a fear of displeasing man more than a fear of displeasing God. We can't be like Eli and David, who never confronted their evil sons, and we see how this turned out for them so poorly in 1 and 2 Samuel. Question 130, what are the sins of superiors? The sins of superiors, besides the neglect of the duties required of them, an inordinate seeking of themselves, their own glory, ease, profit, or pleasure, commanding things unlawful or not in the power of their inferiors to perform, counseling, encouraging, or favoring them in that which is evil, dissuading, discouraging, or discountenancing them in that which is good, correcting them unduly, carelessly exposing or leaving them to wrong, temptation, and danger. I want to read that part again. Carelessly exposing or leaving them to wrong, temptation, and danger. Provoking them to wrath, or in any way dishonoring themselves or lessening their authority by an unjust, indiscreet, rigorous, or remiss behavior. I would encourage you to continue to look at the handout over the next week, especially. It's a lot of times as parents, we want to emphasize the obedience of our children and their responsibilities to us, and we fail to give the same emphasis to the responsibilities that God has placed upon us. And we major on their disobedience, but we minor, if even take classes in, our exasperation. So parents, emphasize this over the look, read this together again and again, and all superiors over the next week, and see where God might convict us. I want to quickly, as we finish, read the responsibilities. What are the duties and the sins of equals? Okay, so it's claiming that even equals here, even if there's not a relationship of superior, of one being a superior and one being an inferior, as equals, we have still responsibilities to show to each other. We're to honor everyone, as it says. Show brotherly love in 1 Peter. The catechism ends the section with, what are the duties of equals? And then I want to give two stories that I thought really shine light on these responsibilities of equals without going into a lot of detail. I think the stories do well. What are the duties of equals? The duties of equals are to regard the dignity and worth of each other in giving honor to go in giving honor to go one before the other, and to rejoice in each other's gifts and advancement as their own. Well, what are the sins of equals? The sins of equals are, besides the neglect of the duties required, the undervaluing of the worth, envying the gifts, grieving at the advancement or prosperity of one another, and usurping the preeminence one over another. Philip, I think his last name is Doddridge, was a preacher of years gone by, and it said that his oldest daughter was his most lovely and engaging child. I don't know if he wrote that or not, but it says that not only that, she was a favorite among everybody. Her friends and families, everybody seemed to like her the most. And she often received invitations to different places. And it said that her father once asked her on such an occasion, what made everybody love her so? And she answered, indeed, Father, I cannot think, unless it's because I love everybody. Another story, just quickly exampling for us, being an example for us of the honor and love that we show to equals. So it tells us that there was a boy, 7 years of age, playing with his sister in the road. He was alarmed when the cry of some men who were in pursuit of a mad dog. The boy, suddenly looking around, saw the dog running towards him, but instead of making his escape, he took off his coat and wrapped it around his arm. He boldly faced the dog and held out his arm covered with the coat. And then the animal attacked him. And it stayed on his arms until the men who were chasing came with clubs and killed the dog. It had to be a long time ago. The men, that says, reproachfully asked the boy, why did you not turn and run and avoid the dog, which he could have easily done? And the boy answered, yes, I could have run from the dog, but if I had, he would have attacked my sister. To protect her, therefore, I thought of offering him my coat until you should come and kill him. I think that's my sign. The fifth commandment's about relationships. It's about relationships and honor. And the honor that inferiors are to show towards superiors, superiors are to show towards inferiors, and just the honor that we're to show towards each other as equals. So I pray that you would study this and consider this over the next week, and that the Lord would, his law would prove to be a light shining on the path. So why don't we be dismissed now for a time of fellowship?